brother. Amen. Please be seated. I've had a bit of a crazy week, and it's also really interesting to hear what all of you are hearing, or at least some of you are hearing, and to see how that kind of fits in with what I've been hearing this week. And so maybe I should sit down and we can just call it a sermon. And wouldn't that be lovely for some of you? But because I am a priest and a preacher, I will go on and keep talking anyways, even though some of you might wish that I don't. No, I'm just kidding. It's been a crazy week for me, and it actually started last week, or the week before that, where I had a meeting with my spiritual director, and we were just talking about some things and some challenges and some things that are in my life and different relationships and so on, and as you do with your spiritual director, things that are going on. And you would think that at this point in my spiritual life, I would not be this way, but I am. And he just stopped and said to me at one point, Myron, how is God meeting you in these things? And if Jesus were you, because that's really important. We often say, what would Jesus do? But it's more like, what would Jesus would do if he were you? If Jesus were you, how would he relate to God in these circumstances? And that's just that's a fundamental, really, question of spiritual formation as we go about our lives. But it just sort of stopped me in my tracks because I realized that I wasn't even thinking of how God was calling me, working in me, relating to me, wanting me to relate to him in these circumstances that I was facing. And then I preached last Sunday, and it was Thanksgiving, and I was talking about Thanksgiving and blessing and God's generous grace that we live in. And then I'm driving to Red Deer, and as I'm driving to Red Deer, my transmission goes out. And it goes out just before we get to Nisku, and we can't get into anything more than second gear. It's an automatic transmission. And we managed to limp into the airport and rent a car and get AMA to come tow our car and continue on to be with my parents for Thanksgiving. But then I was like, on the way home, I was like, I don't know what I'm gonna do. Okay, we got this car, and by now it's like, wow, I know what transmissions cost. And I don't have a lot of margins. And you know what? God provided for us, as it says in Scripture, abundantly above what we could ask or imagine. And I was just left once again beggared spiritually by my own unbelief, my own unwillingness to walk in God's presence. I want to look at our text this morning because I think I see a really clear theme, or I see something going on in them. And it's probably not what you would think of as intuitive, and some of them are really not immediately connected to each other in any way, and which is what happens at this time of year. And each one of these texts is a colossal one. And by that I mean, like, each one of them is just packed with stuff. But here's what I think I see going through it, and this is the one thing I think I want you to take, well, no, I that I'm hearing that I am trying to say today. And it's this, that God desires for us to have real relationships with God and with others. And I think as I look in the text, particularly in the letter to the Thessalonians, what we see is that this is the work of the gospel. And how often I don't live that way. So let's look at our text and see what we're talking about. And I want to say that there is a saying that we often that I've heard a lot. I have never said it myself, I'm proud to say. But Christianity is not a religion, it's what? A relationship. That's not true. You ought not ever say that, at least if you want me to approve of it, which at the end of the day is not something you need to care about. But I just don't think that's true. Because whatever else Christianity is, it is a religion, because it is about the way that we, as people of God, relate to God. But that's the key. It's that relating part. And that there is something that's true about that. It's not just a formality that we do to somehow assuage ourselves, make ourselves feel better. That part's true, and if that's what we think religion is, well, it's not that. But it is actually a religion in which we have a relationship to God that is reconciled. And that's what real relationships are. And notice that relationship is really a tricky word because it kind of tricks us into thinking it's something static. But a relationship is just by definition not something static. It's an action verb, right? It is a relating, which is never static. It is always an ongoing thing, and that's why relationships take work, and they're hard, and they're messy, and they're frustrating, and they're incredible and joyous because we are made for that. So I want to say three things, and I hope I can say them quickly, but the first thing that I see in these texts along these lines is that, first of all, there is an absolute emphasis, and this is probably really the one thing that sums up everything, is that relationship with God is the most important thing in life. That's what it is. But notice how I've defined relationship, because it is the relating to God, always, constantly, that is the most important thing in life. And I see that in each of these three texts that we have, and we'll just leave the psalm aside for now. But Exodus 33 is an unbelievable passage in so many ways, and so much that we could get from that. But the thing that I was struck with this week is that Moses stands in God's presence and almost chides him. But whatever else is happening, it's a dialogue, and we've seen it if we've been reading Exodus and listening. We've been seeing Moses dialogue with God. But do you know what has happened just before this passage? Did anybody else read the text in advance? What's happened just before we get to this passage in Exodus 33? No. It has happened before this, but not immediately before this. What's happened before this is that Moses has gone up, and we had a sermon on this, Moses has gone up and received the law. And he's come back down, and what does he find? In Exodus. We were in Deuteronomy last time. Pardon? The golden calf. The people have said, hey, I guess Moses is off doing his thing. Why don't we fashion a god for ourselves? And they melt all their gold together. And he comes down and he sees them feasting and celebrating and dancing and worshiping this golden calf. And what does he do? Ah, I guess that's better. No. He takes the tablets and he breaks them in half, which is dramatic but also incredibly significant. Because that's the word that has been given, the 10 words, and now they are broken. And they are life to Israel, if you'll remember, which means the life of Israel is broken because they have broken the relating to God. And they are now relating to an other God. They are giving themselves to. That's what worship means, right? Our commitments are the things we commit ourselves to, that we give ourselves to. And that's what they're doing. And so we see that this relationship between Moses and God is critical. But notice what Moses is doing in this now. Because what God does in response to this, in the early part of the passage, is he says, well, I'm going to send you off without me. You can go, but my presence will not go with you. And Moses comes back into God's presence and stands there and dialogues with God and says, essentially, and this is verse 15 of the chapter, if you don't go with us, there's no point in going. Don't send us out. Don't send us out without you. If you know my name, if you have called these people your people, remember, Yahweh, these are your people. Don't send us out without your presence. And God says, you are right. I know your name. And then Moses says this incredible thing. He says, okay, show me your glory. It's like the way it looks in the text. He's like, all right, show me your glory. And God says, yeah, I'm not sure you can handle all of it. But because I do know you, you will know me. You will experience the living relationship with the living God. And so this is really critical, and what we find is that God's presence is everything. Going with God is the only way to go. It is life. And then we get to the Thessalonians passage. And we have Paul and Silvanus and Timothy. And they have gone to Thessalonica on a missionary journey, and they obviously have been transformed by an encounter with Jesus Christ, and they have announced this good news to the people of Thessalonica, and they have responded incredibly, as is evidence to, because Paul says, first of all, we are always in dialogue with God about you. So God is a living and active part of Paul's and Silvanus's and Timothy's lives, because it is the very life that they have received in Jesus. And then in the very end of our passage, they describe what that meant for them to respond. It means you turned from your idols. You turned from all those golden calves, all those things that you wanted to give yourself, or you formerly gave yourself to, and you gave yourself to God who has revealed himself to us in Jesus Christ. And so we see that here, this important relationship is at the very center. And notice also that the only way for Paul and Silvanus and Timothy to announce this to them was to enter into their very lives in relationship with them. That's really critical for the next thing I'm going to say. But it's really critical because it's not your typical idea of evangelism where you say, here are some words that I believe are true, and so you should acknowledge them as true, and if you say yes to these words and then say no to these other words, then you're going to be fine. Paul says, I think the version that we have in our bulletin, which is the NRSV, says something, you know the kind of life we prove to have among you, or something like that. I can't remember exactly how it says, but in the NIV, it says that, instead it says, you know the kind of life we lived among you. That's what it says. And how it was that the gospel shaped everything that we were, and that this relationship that has transformed us transformed our relationship to you and your relationship to God as well. And then we have that Matthew 22 passage where the Pharisees have sent their, they've not had a lot of luck trapping Jesus, so they send their disciples to go trap him, and the Herodians, who were the royal sect people, and they go to trap Jesus, and they're going to get him killed, potentially, with this question, by either the people or the government, because they give him a question that is really difficult for a Jew to answer, because they say, is it lawful to pay taxes to this Gentile Lord who lords it over us, who sets himself up as God? Because to give tax wasn't quite, in the ancient world, wasn't quite the way we view it. It wasn't just that you lose some money, it's that you are acknowledging the lordship of this person and their right. And Jesus, quite cleverly and very importantly, says, show me a coin. Show me a denarius, a Roman coin. Okay, what's on that? It is stamped with an image, and that image that is stamped on there is that of Caesar. So give Caesar the money. But what are you stamped with? The image of God. You give yourself, you give to God the things that are God's, which would be yourself, because that is the most important thing. And so I think I see here that Jesus is saying, we don't belong to Caesar, we belong to God, and that is the primary relationship that we have. And so, relationship with God is the most important thing in life, but secondly and thirdly, I'll say these two things together. First of all, this is real relationship. It is actual relating with all of who we are. It's not, I guess, plastic. And that this, in turn, produces real relationships. Paul talks about how these Thessalonians saw how they lived among them, this life of the gospel, and that they lived like him and like Christ, and that this has become the thing that everybody's talking about. He doesn't have to tell people that they responded well to the gospel because they can see it in the quality of the relationships that they have. Your welcome of us is legendary, Paul says. And when I say that this is real relationship, I mean at least two things. First of all, it acknowledges the real messiness of life, the uncertainties, the anxieties, the things we hope for, want, desire, and our failures. And the other thing is that it really actually involves our real bodies. The things that we do with our bodies, the things that we have, the clothes, the shelter, the food, the social interactions. And there are sort of four things that I want to identify as these real relationships that they involve. And the first one, that we look at these texts and we see the real relationships involve vulnerability. God displays incredible vulnerability to Moses and even Israel. As he's been desperately hurt, first of all, by the people that have rejected him. And we also see that Paul and Silvanus and Timothy are incredibly vulnerable to the Thessalonians. They left themselves open to inspection. God leaves himself open to inspection. He lets himself be questioned by Moses. And that means real relationships also are openness. God opens himself to Moses and says, we are kindred. And we can relate to each other that way, and you can talk to me. And more than that, not just tell me how awesome I am. Tell me how our relationship is going. Because you see, with regard to vulnerability, we can't be in relationship without being vulnerable. And we also cannot be the same after entering into a relationship with anyone, let alone God, because we are opening ourselves to an other. And this relationship also, real relationships also involve sharing. God shares his very self with Moses. He gives him his name and says it to him. I think I've talked about the significance of names in the ancient world. You didn't always tell your real name to people when you first met them because names were significant. They were connected to what you were and who you were. God shares himself, makes himself vulnerable to Moses. And Paul and Silvanus and Timothy have received the hospitality and generosity of God in Jesus Christ, who opened up his life to us to the point of suffering death, death on a cross. And because of that, they are now open and vulnerable and share their very lives with the people in Thessalonica. And you see, mutuality or sharing is essential to relationship. And fourthly, these real relationships are also really challenging. God, of course, challenges Moses, but notice that Moses reminds God of his promises and of his character, and that these are in fact his people, and that they cannot in fact live and be connected to life the way God has desired for them if he's not there. And being in relation to others is fundamentally to be challenged. You see, knowing God and being in relationship with God as God's children or God's people, however we want to say that, is never, ever a blanket endorsement of who we are and who we have been or what we think about God or anything else. It's always a call and a challenge and an invitation for us to allow God to further shape us and to make us more like Jesus. So as we wrap this up, I want to go back to my spiritual director's question to me. How is God meeting me in the real situations and relationships of my life? Am I looking for that? Are we looking for that? Think about the things that immediately come to you when you think of, if you were going to tell me, here are the things that I'm experiencing in my life, the joys, the uncertainties, the challenges. I don't know what they were for you. This week for me, it was facing my mother who has Alzheimer's, trying to figure out how to be a son to her and to my dad, how to deal with a broken down car when I actually need one. There are other things too. I don't know what they are for you. And there are a whole host of things that I'm not even able to acknowledge to myself yet. But am I looking for God in each one of these situations? Do I let God in? Am I open? Am I vulnerable? Am I sharing? And am I challenged in my relationships? Because God, I firmly believe, and hear today in his word, is desiring for each one of us to have real relationships with him first and foremost. And as that becomes a reality and we live in that, it will shape everything else around us. Amen.